Live up to your fullest potential. This is the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
It's time for Star Power Hour, brought to you by ForTalent.com. We'll cover what's hot in the arts and entertainment industry. Our guests will talk about projects they're currently working on and what they're about to do next. You don't want to miss today's show. Now, here is your host, James Barber.
Hey, guys, this is James Barber. Welcome back to the Star Power Hour on VoiceAmerica.com, brought to you by ForTalent.com, your arts and entertainment social network. Before we get into the show this week, who I have an amazing guest who I've known for a while, and I'm just very excited that he's on, breathing heavily on the other end, you can hear him. I want to say the Miranda Sings event that we filmed live at Birdland is airing on August 3rd. That's Saturday, the Saturday after my show airs. You got to log on to voiceamerica.tv and go to the For Talent Arts and Entertainment channel and you will see it. It's only $5.97. I mean, come on. She's hilarious. She's hilarious, all right? It's only running for one day, so make sure you log on to voiceamerica.tv. All right, so last week, I had the amazing Jennifer Aspin on, star of GCB, and what else did she do? Glee, and I mean, talk about funny. I said glamour. Well, who said glamorous can't be funny? She is hilarious, but she's also done these like dramatic films like The Others, and she runs the gamut. And I've always talked about my guest that I have on today. You know, I've talked about him on the radio many times, and I've had the great pleasure to work with him. I met him when, I ran into Hershey Felder in a bathroom, and we were doing shows opposite each other in a little 99-seat theater called the Tiffany Theater in L.A., and Joel was directing that show. And so Hershey introduced me to Joel, and we all became friends, and then Hershey had this idea to do a show called Hershey and Friends or something, or Hershey and Friend. And then we developed that into Back from Broadway, which Joel Zwick directed, who is my guest this week on the Star Power. Are you there, Joel?
I'm here.
I was telling everybody, you know, how we met. We met, you know, through Hershey. And but what I didn't tell everybody is, I mean, those of you who don't know, I mean, remember the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding? Joel directed it. Remember Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari? Joel directed it. I mean, Perfect Strangers, Full House, Family Matters, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Second Sight. Yeah, what you have like 21 TV pilots that have all gone to series?
I think it was 19 out of 21 at a period of time when. But part of it's a cheat. I mean, the fact was I lucked out and started working right at the beginning of my career for Gary Marshall and Miller Boyette. And they were the creators of Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. And when they decided to do a pilot, they would use me because I was their go-to director at that time. And the chances were that because of the power they had within the network structure, there's a good chance that pilot would get on the air. So in a sense, it was a kind of a loaded deck, as we say. But that doesn't change the fact that I had a great old time during those years with Gary and with Tom and Bob. And we produced some very interesting shows. Not all of them turned out to be Laverne and Shirley's or Perfect Strangers or Full House or Family Matters or Step by Step. But they gave me 17 years of employment.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, you know, don't forget Mork and Mindy. I mean,
yes. We had Mork and Mindy in there. Crazy Robin Williams. He was a hoot.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, though, is that we all know that, you know, look, a show can be written and it can get airtime, but it may not last. And I think a lot of it has to do knowing you as a director, having worked with you as a director, you know, on many occasions,
mm-hmm.
you sort of, you know, there's no bullshit. You know, it's just like, you know what your actors can do. You push them. Yeah. And the thing is that you probably know better than they do sometimes what their levels are, and you push them to do things that they might not think they can. But you also, I think, know, you know what, this going into a direction that that might not be the best for that actor. So you sort of pair it off. But it's there's freedom there, you know?
Oh, no. That's always been my modus operandi. For some reason, I was a failed actor for 10 years. And I was really in trouble because there was no way I was going to build a career as an actor. It just wasn't going to happen. But I got to understand the good actors, the people around me who could really do it. And I go, oh, my God, I can't do that. How do they do that? I was always in wonder and amazement at the leaps of faith that they would take, at the chances they would take, at sometimes the stupid things they would do that I was not willing to do because I was living a little too firmly in my head. And I guess that's why I translated that somehow into directing. But I got a great I'm an actor's director. I've always been an actor's director. In sitcom, it was the perfect format to be an actor's director. It was as simple as that, you know. They were simple enough stories. They were not complex in terms of how you manipulated story. They were pretty straightforward, and they were written for characters that they all knew. It wasn't like they were reinventing a new character or two every week. They were writing for people they knew, and so therefore being able to push, shove, cajole, embarrass, love actors was a big help.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, part of what, you know, I focus the show on, it's not, you know, it's not like, you know, this is what I'm doing next. And, you know, this is the show that I mean, we do a little bit about that, but it's more about the behind the scenes sort of thing. Like, you know, how did people get started? What were their obstacles? How do you overcome those? And, you know, you've had such a prolific career and, you know, and you have a Tony nomination. You know, which, you know, that's crazy. You know, it's like, I mean, it's like the, a dream career. You've worked with all of these people. What was it that got you started? Why did you choose to move into this business?
It is interesting because actually, Jim, for all the years we've known each other, I don't think we've ever talked about what the hell was the impulses that brought me into this business to begin with. I don't know that we've ever had the time because when we're meeting and working, we're out there meeting and working. We're developing and building and shaping and constructing. But essentially, my trajectory worked out. First of all, I was not the smartest. I was not the quickest. I was not the anything. I don't know. I was not the most likely to succeed, for sure. None of those things existed. But it was a call, a question of, as I tracked it back, as you get older, you start to track things back a little bit to find out what the hell was the impulse. Where did it all come from? And I guess if I had to mention anything as the starting point of why I even have a career would be this friend I had in high school and college, Roy Levine. Well, just to make a long story short, Roy Levine wound up directing a very, very avant-garde play, politically charged play back in 1967 called McBird. And for any of you younger people who have no idea what McBird is, it basically told the story of Macbeth, but put Lyndon Johnson in the character of McBird, Lady Bird, the Kennedunks instead of the Kennedys, and essentially it basically stated that Lyndon Johnson had to be involved somehow in the killing of John F. Kennedy, and that the Warren Report was whitewashed, and we were politically a juggernaut. I had my phone tapped for close to 9 months during that period of time because we were
you
all
serious.
Yeah,
I didn't even know. Sounds like what's going on now.
Exactly. Anyway, we're being tapped currently because of that McBird experience. But essentially, I was working as an actor and an assistant stage manager, had all these small parts, and nothing was really particularly exciting about that. And I just got nuts. I was doing 8 shows a week, and I did that for 11 months. And I basically went into some kind of emotional breakdown because I realized that I couldn't do that for my living. I could not replicate that kind of a thing 8 days a week. I remember I lived in Brooklyn Heights, so I was taking my car into the city, and I couldn't remember where I parked my car most nights. It all became one big blur for me. So I basically had a bit of a nervous breakdown, and I was saved from that nervous breakdown by another friend who was with McBird with me, actor, wonderful actor by the name of Andy Robinson. Best known, I suppose, which is a pity, is best known as the Aquarius Killer in Dirty Harry, which he did when he was like 25 years old. But anyway, he wanted to get involved in a company at La Mama, and he invited me. He said, would you like to join? So having nothing better to do with my time, I decided I'll go try this company at La Mama. And what we were doing at that time, it was being run by this guy, Stanley Rosenberg, who had just worked with Eugenio Barber in Italy and with Jerzy Gutowski at the Polish Lab Theater. And it was a whole new way of attacking how you train actors. How to get actors to stay in the moment, how to get actors to get out of their heads, how to get actors to stop worrying about their lines and their staging or anything else, but just be there. Be there, which is the goal of any actor. He'll tell you that if he could just be there, trust the craft he has and just fly with it, he's going to be in good shape. So I came from that background. So I was then teaching around it. I taught at Yale School of Drama, where Henry Winkler and Jill Eikenberry and Ken Howard were all students of mine.
Wow.
I'm old. Then I went to Queens College. And at Queens College, I had two students called Lowell Ganz and Mark Rothman. Lowell Ganz eventually teamed up with Bob Lou Mandel, and they wrote Parenthood, and they wrote Splash, and they were big. At one time, they were in the top 15 money earners in the business because of their screenwriting ability. And they had a friend at Queens College named Greg Antonacci, who joined my company. He didn't join it. He wasn't asked to join it. He was just an Italian from Hell's Kitchen who decided he was going to be a member of my company, whether we wanted him there or not. So it was Greg that basically came up with me, with the idea for Dance With Me, which was a show we then eventually played at La Mama, played at the Public Theater, played it in New Orleans, for crying out loud, and then it went to Broadway, spent a year and a half on Broadway, and that's where I got my Tony nomination for Dance With Me.
Did you actually create that show?
It was created by Greg Antonacci along with our company, the Plexus Company. Greg was credited, as he should have been, with writing it, but there was input from virtually all the actors because it was that kind of an insane period of time in the theater, the off Broadway theaters, where it was about company-driven stuff. So,
hey, Joel, I have to take my first break. We got 30 seconds till our first break. But this is what I love. This is what this show is about. And I've heard some of it, but not all of it. And I want to continue with this when we come back for the second segment. All right, stay tuned, guys, with Joel Zwick. This is Jim's Barber on the Star Power Hour. Do not eat a donut. I'll tell you what that means, Joel, in a minute. We will be right back. Stay tuned.
Live up to your fullest potential. This is the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Everybody has a dream. For some, that dream is to become an actor, comedian, or dancer. Others dream of signing a recording contract, being on Broadway, or directing their own film. Now those dreams can come true, because on 4talent.com, we turn the spotlight on talent. On 4talent.com, everyone can participate in online contests and festivals. Log on and get into exclusive interviews with industry experts, create personal scrapbooks and photo albums, plus communicate with other members who share your passions. So what are you waiting for? Whether you're an artist or a fan, sign up today. Membership is free. Join today, and you just might be one of the people who get to say,
I got my break on 4talent.com, and you can too.
It's time to access your magic. Tune in each week to Living in the Magic of Possibilities with your host, Glenice Hughes. Our topics cover finances, personal health, business, relationships, mediumship, and so much more. If you want to access all that is possible in your life, listen to Glenice and her expert guests who've turned the impossible into the possible. Living in the Magic of Possibilities is heard live every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
When you think of inspiring women, who comes to mind? Is it a visionary like Oprah Winfrey? Political or legal figures like Hillary Clinton or Sonia Sotomayor? Or how about entrepreneurial business leaders like Meg Whitman? No matter whom you might be thinking of, make sure to add one more to that list. Deanne DeMarco. She's the host of Today's Inspiring Women. Each week, Deanne turns you on to the next rising star in business and leadership and what their successes and challenges have been. Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Empowerment.
Live up to your fullest potential. This is the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
You
You are tuned in to Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4Talent.com. Your host is James Barber. If you'd like more information about 4Talent.com and what we do, just log on to our website at 4Talent.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, guys, welcome back. It's James Barber on the Star Power Hour. I am with Joel Zwick. I'm not going to waste any more time because this is what I love about this show, guys. This is what I'm trying to do. You can hear how Joel's talking about all of the different things. I mean, ironically, Henry Winkler, he taught at Yale, then went on later to, you know, I mean, I'm sure you worked with him professionally as well, didn't you?
Yes, Paul? I did when I got a chance to direct crossover episodes because forget his name now. Oh, God, that's shame on me. But anyway, Happy Days was directed by Jerry Paris. He did all of them except for three episodes, which were crossover episodes with Laverne and Shirley, which I directed. So I got a chance to direct Henry after all those years, and that was kind of fun. Henry, truly one of the great men and gentlemen of the business, besides, you know, listen, an indelible character. How do you take away the fonds from somebody?
But yeah, and talk about diverse. I remember meeting him with John Ritter. Bless him. God, I love John Ritter.
Oh, John.
You know, he and Henry, I met John at Jerry's Deli out here because one of the people that were doing the hair in Beauty and the Beast was working on Wings, right? Right. So he had the connection there because, you know, he's married to somebody who was doing that. And then I met him just off the cuff, just, you know, and he'd seen the show. He saw Beauty and the Beast. And years later, he and Henry are in New York doing what that play that it was Dinner with Friends or one of those plays. And I'm on like 43rd and like 9th, and I'm hearing James.
I remember James.
I'm like, who the hell? I'm like, James. And I'm looking over, and John Ritter, who I met once in Jerry's Deli, is on the other side of the street, jumping up and down, waving his arms, going, James, it's John Ritter. It's John Ritter. And I'm like, John Ritter screaming at me on the street. And one, I think the most gracious and wonderful people. And then I met Henry through him.
Mm-hmm.
And again, And Henry came to see Carousel on Broadway, and I remember seeing him do his version of A Christmas Carol, that movie version, going from the fonts that I'm like, unbelievable diversity. Anyway.
Yes. So anyway, what happened was then I was because Greg Antonacci, Italians into my company, and basically at that particular point he creates with the company Dance With Me, gets me a Tony nomination, and because of that somebody, this guy Norman Slane, who ran a series of three theaters in the Northeast, who'd been keeping an eye on me, and I was shocked. I said, "You've been watching my development." He said, "Yes, I want you to direct." So I wound up directing Shenandoah, starring John Raitt, and then I moved on to Shenandoah, starring Howard Keel, which turned out to be a little bit of an embarrassment in that my summer stock production, my 1 week rehearsal with Howard Keel in Shenandoah, got picked over the Broadway production to play the Kennedy Center for at that time President Carter and Lillian.
Wow.
Which pissed off, what was his name, Phil Rose. Phil Rose was crazed about that he couldn't get his Broadway production to go down there and play that. My summer stock production played it. But then I did that, and then I did a Christine Andreas Oklahoma, her first one. Not the one that when she reprised it on Broadway. This is a summer stock tour she did when she was a 20-year-old girl and and had the chops, that insane voice of hers, basically going for her. So that went on, and then I basically got a chance to do a little bit of, you know, some stuff off Broadway and a couple of plays and stuff until I had 2 weeks free. I was in Las Vegas. I had mounted a show for all strange reasons at a theater in Las Vegas called Merry-Go-Round, a review.
Right.
And basically had 2 weeks free, so I thought I'd come out to L.A. and visit with my friend Greg Antonacci, who at this point was being brought out to Hollywood by Lowell Ganz and Mark Rothman to do a recurring role on Laverne and Shirley. And then they developed a new show called Busting Loose, which starred Adam Arkin back in 1977, 78. So Greg would drag me to the set because I had no place else to go, and I was watching this thing, and everybody, all the cast, when they found out there was a Tony nominated director, would come up to me to ask me what they thought my opinion was of scenes. And I said, okay, whatever that's all about. Greg came up with this idea. He said, why don't you direct an episode of Busting Loose? And I didn't think that was such a good idea. I was a man of the theater, And I didn't know how the hell I would do that kind of a thing. But I got myself good and stoned that night and thought to myself, wait a second, Mr. Hotshot. First of all, nobody's asked you to do it. Second of all, you don't know if you can do it. Third of all, you don't know if you can do it, whether you're going to like doing it. I said, you got to take opportunities. This is an opportunity. Not yet. I have to earn it. But the fact is, I have to go after this. So I decided to go after this. So Greg set me up a meeting with Paramount Studios at that time, who had to okay this thing. First, he went to Lowell Gans and to Mark Rothman, and they said, listen, I'd like Joel to direct an episode. And they said, oh, that'd be great, but I don't believe the network or Paramount's going to let him do it because it's a show that's a new show. They just don't let young these new people do that stuff. But Greg said, well, listen, but if they say it's okay, would it be okay with you? And I think that Lowell simply was buying him off with sure, sure, sure. But nonetheless, I went on to a meeting with Paramount, and this was a good classic meeting. A meeting lasted 30 seconds, Jim. All I did was I walked into this meeting with a lovely lady by the name of Judy Kopage, and I said, listen, I have never directed a sitcom before, so I'm not going to stand here and tell you I know how to direct situation comedy. But I've been watching for a couple of weeks now, and in my estimation, a retarded monkey can direct sitcom. I said, what are you going to do? They're not going to point the cameras at each other. If I can talk to actors and talk to writers, you ought to give me a shot. She looked at me and said, okay, give me a second. She gets on the phone with this guy, Tony Barr at CBS, and says, listen, I got a guy I want to direct an episode of Busting Loose. I'm sending him over. And that was it.
Wow.
I got to direct this episode of Busting Loose. And then, of course, Lowell was thinking, and Mark, well, I didn't realize he was actually going to get a shot at this. So Greg said, listen, if it's that big a problem for you, he can direct one of my scripts. So he had written a script for himself and Annie Potts, wonderfully crazy actress, who I think they were, I don't know whether they were living, I know they were living together because I was there with them, but whether they were married and living together or living in sin, as we used to call it, I couldn't tell you. But anyway, it was a great episode, and that was the end of it. And I went back to New York, I directed a play, and then I saw in the paper that Lowell Gans and Mark Rothman had a new series that they were going to be producing. It was called The Ted Knight Show, and it was Ted Knight right after his Mary Tyler Moore experience.
Ted Knight. I love Ted Knight.
I know. So at any rate, I came. They said, yes, come on out, and you can direct an episode. Not only did I get to direct an episode, I got to actually act in an episode. Then the Paramount got interested in me and was trying to keep me around so that they would send me a screen test to direct. I directed screen test 4. Joey Travolta, John Travolta's brother, because John had just made it really big with Saturday Night Fever. And they thought maybe his brother, Joey Travolta, who was a very good-looking man, might be able to do likewise. So I did his screen test. Then I did another one for Lyle Alzado. Lyle Alzado was the defensive end for the Oakland Raiders. And he was the one who caused all that trouble because he died of cancer, which he claimed was based on all the steroids and stuff that he was taking all those years. And he was a cause celeb. And so I did his screen test. And Paramount just kept me around. And eventually, I did this 10-minute presentation called Blue Collar Bride, which eventually became the series Angie. And Gary Marshall was the exec on that. So he went in, he saw a screening of this little 10-minute blue-collar bride. And then when he saw me afterwards, he said, you know, I think I'm going to give you a shot with the girls next season. I didn't know what he was talking about. It turned out to be Laverne and Shirley. And that was the beginning of it. I got Laverne and Shirley when it was the number one show in America. I was directing it. And then from that point on, it just kept going and going and going and going. And, you know, once you can get through a door, and with whatever initial skill set you have going in, be it your speed of mind, your energy, or sense that you're a funny guy, whatever it is that gets you in the door, from that point on, you can actually start to develop craft. You can actually start to learn to do what you're doing.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Because I talk about that, you know, because I have a lot of people that listen to the show that, you know, look, we have a lot of listeners that are not in the entertainment field at all, but we have a lot of people that are. And, one of the questions comes up is the persistent drive toward reaching a goal. And what is that? Is that, you know, look, you know, there are certain skills that I don't have. There are certain skills that I have. I talked about this to Jennifer Aspen. I remember when I first got to L.A., I went in for a film, you know, and I was trying to, you know, do TV and film, and the casting director looks at me and goes, oh my God, that was an incredible audition. You're not getting this job. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? And he goes, well, we've already cast a leading lady. She's 5'3".
That's right. You're too tall.
I'm 6'4". You're 6'3½", 6'4". You know, there's no way that I'm going to be 5'4". So you have to find those things and keep pushing and pushing, you know. And it to me, I don't know. You have so many things that are just, that are so beyond the average individual. And I think one of them is just the ability just to be you, you know, and there's no pretense. There's nothing else. It's just, no, this is me. Going in and saying, I don't know how to direct this damn thing, but this is what I'm going to do. You know?
Yeah, I'll just get in there and do it. And you know, the fact that when I switched from being a failed actor at La Mama to a director at La Mama, it was very interesting. We were doing this play that Andy Robinson wrote called Last Chance Saloon back in 1969, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was 69. And it was a wonderful play. And I was basically in the company, but I didn't have a role in the play. It was a five-hander. And I was going to be the stage manager. And we were in rehearsals for a week when all of a sudden I got called into the offices by Ellen Stewart, La Mama herself, and Andy Robinson. And they determined they wanted me to direct it. They wanted to get rid of the director who was doing it. They wanted me to take it over. Well, they had never seen me direct anything. To their knowledge, I had never directed anything. I actually did direct something, a master's thesis project, when I got my master's at Brooklyn College. But there was no reason to believe that I could direct this thing. And I had no reason to believe that I could direct this thing. But whatever the same chutzpah is that just says, I'm just going to find a way to do this.
Yeah.
And I did find a way to do it, and it was a success. And that's when I—that's how I stepped working at La Mama as a director. I became a director, and then it was Dance With Me, and then it was John Raitt and Howard Keel, and before you knew it, my whatever that natural energy I have—that's pretty much spot on. I mean, I tell the truth; it's my perspective of the truth, but I really don't lie, you know.
No. I'll tell you, folks, when, you know, and I've worked with Joel, you know, in theater stuff. So, you know, there is none of that. This is the truth. It's that scene sucks. The scene sucks and you suck in it and you need to fix it. And you're like, okay, good. You know, and sometimes like people who haven't worked with you at first, they're like, oh my God, he hates me. And they're like, and then you're like, all right, shut up. I love you. You know, it's not about that. Cause obviously you don't, you love everybody.
And the fact
you know,
is that I would never shout anything at somebody I didn't respect. That's the thing. If somebody, I will never beat a dead dog. I will never beat some actor who isn't up to snuff because they're not up to snuff. However, if I have an actor who I know is above and beyond the ability to do that work, and they're not doing the work, that's when I got to work them over, because they can, not only can they take it, they will rise to it. They will rise
Absolutely.
To it and nail it. I mean, that's what actors do.
Hold that thought. I got to take my next break because I want to come back. I want to ask you about a very specific thing. Hey, guys, stay with us. We'll be right back with the more amazing Joel Zwick right after this. This is James Barber on the Star Power Hour. Stay tuned.
Live up to your fullest potential. This is the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Everybody has a dream. For some, that dream is to become an actor, comedian, or dancer. Others dream of signing a recording contract, being on Broadway, or directing their own film. Now those dreams can come true, because on 4Talent.com, we turn the spotlight on talent. On 4Talent.com, everyone can participate in online contests and festivals. Log on and get into exclusive interviews with industry experts, create personal scrapbooks and photo albums, plus communicate with other members who share your passions. So what are you waiting for? Whether you're an artist or a fan, sign up today. Membership is free. Join today, and you just might be one of the people who get to say,
I got my break on 4Talent.com, and you can too.
When you think of inspiring women, who comes to mind? Is it a visionary like Oprah Winfrey? Political or legal figures like Hillary Clinton or Sonia Sotomayor? Or how about entrepreneurial business leaders like Meg Whitman? No matter whom you might be thinking of, make sure to add one more to that list. Deanne DeMarco. She's the host of Today's Inspiring Women. Each week, Deanne turns you on to the next rising star in business and leadership and what their successes and challenges have been. Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Empowerment.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iRadioBlog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
You are tuned in to Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4talent.com. Your host is James Barber. If you'd like more information about 4talent.com and what we do, just log on to our website at 4talent.com. Now, back to the show.
Hey, by the way, welcome back, guys. Joel, I didn't tell you what the Don't Eat a Donut is. I'm trying to get everybody off of sugar.
Good. I need to get off of sugar right now, to be quite honest. Go.
You know, I put Maddie's doing that Slenderize, those homeopathic drops. Madeline Sunshine is the woman that wrote Serrano. She wrote the I Hate Homes, was a very, very successful TV writer, you know, with her husband, Steve Sunshine. Her husband's one of the producers of Extra. Anyway, those homeopathic drops I've been doing, I got Maddie on that. But I'm trying to, you know, don't eat a donut. That's where that came from.
I like it. Yeah, I'm dealing with that right now. I found out that I did something. I overly splurged on my sugar addiction in the last, 6 months, where I felt like, why can't I have some ice cream every night? And why can't I have two Frappuccinos every day? And what's wrong with cookies? And cookies are nice. And all of a sudden, I went to a doctor, took some blood work. My doctor calls me, says, you know, your blood sugar level is elevated. And I went, oh, Jesus, big surprise. So I've been cold turkeying and doing very well with no sugar. And it's interesting. If I take a little sugar by mistake right now, I feel a rush.
Yeah. I'm doing the same thing because I realized, I talked about this, you know, since the kids were born, since Hudson was born, you know, we've got a gym in the house. I've been on the pre-core like 3 times in 5 years.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I understand.
And so I decided I got to. You know, get my body back in shape. I'm not out of shape. I'm in shape, but it's not was.
And the fact is, I can't tell the difference with you. I mean, if you're 10 pounds heavier, 20 pounds heavier, 15 pounds lighter, you always look the same to me. But it's how you feel internally that makes the difference, not the fact that nobody can tell the difference about whether you've put on 15 pounds or not isn't really what it's about.
Yeah. But, so I'm doing that whole blood workup thing, doing the whole thing.
Okay, yeah, kind of the same thing. But I wanted to bring up an interesting point because you brought it up earlier. One of the things that is interesting about me is through all this, what I had was a blue-collar work ethic of just doing the best I could every time I was put in a situation where I had to do something. I had no goals. I was not goal-oriented. I did not think, oh, good God, I want to direct TV or I wanted to direct film or even I wanted to direct theater. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. Therefore, I had my nervous breakdown after acting for a year, realizing that this couldn't be the future for me. I didn't know what my future was going to be because I had no goals towards the future. But essentially, what I replaced it with was work ethic and the fact that you have to take opportunities. You can't be afraid of an opportunity or you can't poo-poo an opportunity primarily because you're afraid of it, although you don't tend to admit that to yourself. You come up with all kinds of excuses why, well, I'm not going to do that thing because perhaps it's more challenging and you're not willing to put out the time and energy. But when I decide to laser focus in on something that I need to accomplish, that turned out to be one of my my biggest skill sets that, you know, we get skill sets anyway. You were born with a voice. You were also born being 6'4". I mean, not yet, but you had the genetics for that.
Yeah.
I had genetics that gave me an enormous amount of energy. It gave me a quick mind, and I was a funny little man. Those were essentially skill sets, and I used those skill sets to my advantage as I built up the other crafts necessary. As an actor, anybody aspiring in any career, I'm finding out that it's all about skill sets. They're talking about it now in terms of trying to train people for the jobs necessary to be done in the future. They need certain skill sets to do those jobs.
Right.
Well, we as actors, directors, lighting designers have to have skill sets to be able to accomplish all the things that people might ask us to accomplish. The more skill sets you got, the more chances you've got of landing something that's useful to you. So I'm really just a fluke in the fact that without a goal, but then again, no job was too small because I never had the goals. I never thought of myself as I'm only doing features. That never occurred to me because that's not who I was. I was just this blue-collar kid that became very project-oriented. And if I got to tell you, if that project is an off Hollywood play that I think is more interesting than something else, I'll do that.
That's what I find fascinating. I mean, we were sitting there with I Hate Homes, right? The new piece that we were working on. And I've watched you. You know, and I'm younger than you are, right?
Yeah,
you got kids. You've been through it, right?
Yes,
and
I have.
You know, and I'm sitting there going, all right, I got two kids. I'm freaking exhausted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And But the amazing thing to me is that you knew that script. Now, you're also directing Shake It Up, the Disney series.
Right.
Right. On a continual basis, you're doing all of Hershey's shows,
right?
Plus, I'm sure, countless other projects that I'm not even aware of, mm-hmm. plus Serrano, plus all these things. And yet you're able to come in and know the script backwards and forwards and, you know, go, nope, I took this out. We took this out. You know where the lines are. You know where the pages are. Better sometimes than the authors.
Yeah, somewhere along the way, right at the beginning, literally on my first job on doing Busting Loose, the first show I ever directed, I was watching and I'm thinking to myself, why are these directors holding scripts? I said, "What? That's crazy. How can they be paying attention to the actors if they're holding scripts? Don't they have script supervisors who look at scripts and they have dialogue coaches who look at scripts? Why should I, as a director, be looking at the script? I should be paying attention to the actors." And so therefore, I just went through the process of essentially understanding, not line by line, but the visual flow. I don't care if it was the visual flow of a major musical, the visual flow of how a sitcom is going to look, or a big movie. Still, I had to understand the visual flow, and I had to have that flow essentially vetted in terms of was it the most efficient flow? Is that the way I really thought it should happen? What are the alternatives if I don't do it that way? So I had the whole thing, and that was how I did my homework. And therefore, from that stay on, if you know, I don't use a script when working on Serrano. I don't use, unless I'm forced to because I have to play some bloody role in rehearsal. I'm not using a script. I'm basically watching the actors and seeing what they come up with. I have an idea of what would fit into a somewhat of a vision that I have, and I notice things that shouldn't fit into my vision, and basically I push the actors into things that fit into my vision. Or if you'll come up with a choice that was a brilliant choice. You decided that, you know, we got this line in this song that, how'd you do it? No, I shot him in the head. And you came up and you said, you know, we ought to have one guy in the chorus who keeps on saying that until everybody really gets pissed at him because he hasn't heard yet. The fact was that the answer was, I shot him in the head. And that turned that song around. But that's you. But also, it's my ability to hear what you were saying that fast.
Right. Yeah,
I picked up on that almost before you got it out of your mouth, and I said, "Oh, yeah. Of course, let's go, let's do this."
And I'll tell you, I took a lot of what I learned from you, you know, over the years when I went over to Korea to direct A Tale of Two Cities. Like, I've worked with great directors, but the thing that I was dealing with over there was a massive language barrier.
You think?
So I couldn't, and the translations were different. I mean, there was one line where, the translation was, Sidney Carton is basically drunk and in the courtroom, and at the end, this guy is vindicated, and somebody said, "Oh, we have to thank Mr. Carton as well." And in the scene, Carton stands up in the courtroom and removes his wig, right? And it shows that he has information about this guy.
Right.
So that's caused the vindication. So at the end, they said, "Oh, we must thank Mr. Carton as well." And one of the actors said, "Thank him." From what I could see, all he did was stand up, right? Which is a comic line. And then in English, Carton's line is, "It was a feat of heroic proportions," meaning it took great effort for him to do that, right?
I stand, yes.
Well, in Korean, they said, you know, from what I can see, all Mr. Carton could do or did was stand up. And the Korean translation was, "It's because I have the figure of a hero."
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what? It didn't get a laugh, didn't do anything. So it took me like 2 or 3 weeks because I didn't have what's called a back translation.
Right.
To know what that line was. So once we fixed that, I had to then look at the overall picture. And I was like, I was literally going, okay, what would Joel do in this situation? Because I don't have the language. So I used that. But it's fascinating because
as an actor at this point in your career, you're on the moment. You're there. You're there from the day you pick up the script. You're there. You know exactly where you're going to be able to take things, where you want to take things. You don't seem to be overly concerned about whether you know the blocking. You find the blocking and you know it immediately. It sticks in your head like that fast. You never miss it. Once you decide, I'll get up on this line, I'll cross here. I feel good about that. I think I should sit here. That's the end of it. You don't lose that. So in a sense, you work as an actor, not unlike as I work as a director, in that somehow you assimilate information so rapidly now that you can basically be there virtually the entire rehearsal process, you know, without having to think too much and to mull things over. And most of our rehearsal processes aren't giving us the time to do that.
We don't. And, you know, and I think about that in you know, the little bit of television I've done, too. There's really not a lot of time. You got to make a choice. You got to make it work, and you got to go.
And, usually, that's essentially it. It's not. It's a medium that basically casts you for what it is you do. I had a story when I was doing a pilot once, and there was this young lady in the pilot, and we were into the third day of rehearsal. Essentially, we were going to start shooting in 2 days. These things don't go on more like than 6 days for a pilot in those days. I finally had to go up to her, and I said, "Excuse me, what do you do?" And she said, "What do you mean, what do I do?" I said, "Well, you sit when I tell you to sit. You stand when I tell you to stand. You cross when I tell you to cross. But I still have no idea what you do. You haven't shown me what it is they cast you for." And she said, "Oh, I thought you were going to, I was waiting for you to tell me what to do." And I said, "Not in this idiom. No, no, no. In this idiom, I will make you the best you I can make. But until I know what it is that you are, what do you do? Are you sassy? Are you funny? Are you, what do you do? I can't work with you." And essentially, I do that with most actors. I got to find out what it is they do best and then make them the best they can possibly be. I'm not looking to cast a giraffe and decide 2 days in that I really should have cast an elephant, so I'm going to try to turn a giraffe into an elephant, because that's going to be a major failure every time. You can't do that. You've got to go with the money. You cast hopefully well. You try to use your acumen to create an ensemble feel so that the only ego around tends to be mine. Everybody else is basically part of a team. And if I can create that team and get every actor to be the best they can be, well, that's why pilots sell.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that when we come back. We're going to take our final break, because I want to talk about in our final segment, some of those great actors that you've worked with. And one of the things that I like about what I'm doing with you now is we're doing comedy. And, you know, First off, I was the dark brooding guy, you know, but I've always been a dork. And that finally, I'm allowed to let that out. But I want to talk about these great actors you worked with, great director with great actors, when we come back. Guys, stay tuned. This is James Barber with the amazing Joel Zwick on the Star Power Hour. We will be right back after this break. Stay tuned.
Live up to your fullest potential. This is the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Everybody has a dream. For some, that dream is to become an actor, comedian, or dancer. Others dream of signing a recording contract, being on Broadway, or directing their own film. Now those dreams can come true, because on 4talent.com, we turn the spotlight on talent. On 4talent.com, everyone can participate in online contests and festivals. Log on and get into exclusive interviews with industry experts, create personal scrapbooks and photo albums, plus communicate with other members who share your passions. So what are you waiting for? Whether you're an artist or a fan, sign up today. Membership is free. Join today, and you just might be one of the people who get to say,
"I got my break on 4talent.com, and you can too."
Think of anybody who does not want a better life and to be a better person? Think about that for a second. Almost everyone wants to be better, but how does one go about doing that? One thing that is making people better every week is tuning in to the Self-Improvement Show with Dr. Irene Conlon. All real change comes from within, but many of us don't know where to find the information or guidance we need to make the changes that bring about the improvement. Most of us don't know how to work within. Listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Empowerment.
Want more positivity in your life? Are you ready to get healthy, happy, and energized? Join the Stella Donna Goddess Gals, Cynthia Bryan and Heather Brittany, for a power hour of stimulating, supportive conversation on Star Style. Be the star you are. A lineup of best-selling authors, celebrities, and experts. Join the effervescent mother-daughter dynamic duo in this upbeat, positive, life-changing talk radio playground.
Star Style. Be the star you are. Wednesdays, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Lend us your ears. It's power time.
Change your world. Change your life. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are tuned in to Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4Talent.com. Your host is James Barber. If you'd like more information about 4Talent.com and what we do, just log on to our website at 4Talent.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, guys, welcome back. This is James Barber on the Star Power Hour. I just want to remind everybody, Miranda Sings. You can go to Twitter, at Miranda Sings. She has 500,000 subscribers on YouTube. She's had 50 million views over her two YouTube channels. And we are doing a pay-per-view event on voiceamerica.tv August 3rd, this Saturday, one day only. You can log in. I think it's 11 a.m. I think it's 11 a.m. Pacific. It's only $5.97. You got to watch this girl. She's hilarious. Amazing parody character. And we are with Joel Zwick for our final segment. Joel, we were talking about letting actors and having the actors do what they do. And you've worked with so many great ones, you know, including, you know, basically launching their careers. I would say Tom Hanks, mm-hmm. you know, Robin Williams, mm-hmm. you know, I had the great opportunity to work. And I mentioned this, the great Peter Scolari.
Mm-hmm. I know you do a show with him. Yes.
Yeah. The Foreigner. He's just probably one of the most amazing physical comedians I've ever seen.
Oh yeah. No. And it's a sad thing that Peter has had a remarkable career. I got to tell you, there's not one in 100 working actors who could claim his career, yet he had the misfortune of being that footnote to history of who was the other bosom buddy was Tom Hanks, which is not really fair to Peter. And, you know, Tom, every time Tom does something, Peter's in it, because Tom, I just went to visit them when they were doing the show in New York.
Yeah,
and basically Peter was in it, and Tom isn't doing favors to Peter. Tom says, I like to have Peter there because I know when I turn for a moment to Peter, he's going to be there.
Yeah.
We have a vocabulary. So, yeah, I've had a good slew of them. I got trained a little bit by Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams. They showed me how the business was done because they were very idiosyncratic in how they performed Laverne and Shirley, very specific. And they liked me because I had high energy and I was a funny little man. They thought that was hysterical. As a matter of fact, the great story about Cindy Williams is that she'd be running around the set screaming half my weekly salary to whoever will put downers in that man's coffee. but essentially, yeah, then Hanks, and people always ask me, did you know? All I can tell you, he was a 21-year-old kid when he showed up. We were doing a talent search for ABC. Selznick was doing it, the young Selznick, the daughter. And she was finding talent all over America. And then ABC was going to theoretically put this talent into pilots that they had going. And so Tom Hanks got picked up, and he was working as an understudy in an off-Broadway play, living in a Coldwater flat. And basically, he got picked up by ABC to do Bosom Buddies, along with Donna Dixon, came out of that same group, and but Tom was always unique. Tom had a sense of himself that was outrageous, considering he had no history. He spent three seasons doing small roles at the Cleveland Shakespeare Festival before he did Bosom Buddies, and that was it. Yet he had a sense of himself in terms of his rhythms, in terms of how he'd bend moments, how he'd be there. That was quite remarkable. So I guess when you think about it, it's not a surprise that he evolved, but what wasn't a surprise was his attention to detail. He sat all the time learning on the set, caring on the set, paying attention on the set. We would spend weekends together because we were the only bosom buddies that had kids at the time. He had Colin and Elizabeth, who were just about the same ages as my Jamie and Hillary, so we do barbecues at his house. The kids would come up and swim in my pool because Tom didn't have a pool. He couldn't afford one at the time. I remember he was preparing for Splash.
Right.
And I walk out of my house, and I'm panicked. There's somebody sitting at the bottom of my pool. And it's Tom Hanks trying to get as much time underwater as he possibly can wearing complete gear.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So, You know, so Tom and I go back. Tom was unique. Robin Williams was just zany as can be. Robin was a different problem in that everybody in town knew about Robin Williams. He was out of a group called Off the Wall. And as an improv comic, no peer, no peer. But the business was scared to Jesus from him. They were just scared. Right. And basically, they had somebody cast to play Mork in a Happy Days episode. And that guy was not panning out. They had to get rid of that guy, or that guy decided he didn't want to do it. And sure enough, they decided they had no choice. They had 2 days left to shoot that episode, and they brought in Robin Williams. And well, the rest is for Robin was history. I mean, he translated to the medium exceptionally well. Mm. And he proved to have more discipline than anybody thought he would have. And he developed a career out of that. He was it was quite remarkable. But, you know, there was quite a few. There's Bronson Pinchot and Mark Lynn Baker from Perfect Strangers who, they were a gift to each other. I mean, I did the pilot of Perfect Strangers without Mark Lynn Baker. That was initially done with Louis Anderson, the heavy comic.
Yeah, I remember Louis.
Louis, and he just finished diving on Diving with the Stars. I don't know, but anyway, he was the foil to Bronson in the pilot for Perfect Strangers, and it got picked up. And then Bill Milliboyette went to ABC and said, "You know something? We don't think there are legs for this show with Louis in it. We think we got to recast that role." And ABC let us do it. And when Bronson and Mark found each other, the chemistry was insanely good. It was the same kind of same thing happened on Bosom Buddies. Peter Scolari wasn't the original Bosom Buddy.
Really?
No, he wasn't Bosom Buddy. We had some kid who had just done a few beach blanket bingo movies. He's a young, good-looking, blonde kid. And I was not in rehearsal for a whole day. I'd rehearsed in the morning, and I went to Tom and Bob, and I said, "Guys, this kid can't do it. He can't do it." And they can't. I said, "I'm putting up a run-through." They said, "You've only been rehearsing 3 hours." I said, "I'm putting up a run-through. You got to see what's going on here." And sure enough, they looked at. They said, "That's crazy. We can't do it with this kid." So they called up ABC. They said, "You got to come down. We got to talk. We can't do the show with this kid. We got to replace him." And they couldn't find anybody. And they were about to pull the pilot when I got an idea. I said, "You know something? I just did a series with Peter Scolari. I'll bet you Peter Scolari might be a good match with Tom Hanks." And they said, "Well, I don't know if we want to take the chance." And I said, "Listen, I'll call Peter. If Peter's willing to come in tomorrow, put 3 scenes on its feet, and I show you these 3 scenes. If you like him, you let us stay in production. If you don't like him, he walks, no money, no responsibility. That's the deal." They bought the deal, and we did those 3 scenes, and we stayed in rehearsal, and those two guys had found each other, and they were blessed to find each other. That's why Tom is always using Peter today.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I talked about when we did The Foreigner, Peter gave me a book called The War of Art, not The Art of War, The War of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a whole episode on it a couple weeks ago. I think he's just such a remarkable guy. And, you know, and I ended
never
up
never mind a juggler and a unicyclist.
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous. That's
because
like what planet
Tom
did he come from?
Juggle, they would do juggling. We did juggling in one episode. Tom learned it from Peter. Peter taught him all those little skills.
He's unbelievable. I mean, just a true artist. And I ended up, when I did that Nightmare Alley at the Geffen, Rita Wilson was doing, was it the Vagina Monologues down there?
Yes,
and so she was there. So it was like this shows, kind of cool thing, you know, just to be around that amazing talent. But, you know, and I always think of Robin Williams because I remember one of his first comedy things. I always talk about it. He came out and he did this parody of Shakespeare and he goes, "What news, Fahernia? The moon, like a testicle, hangs low in the sky."
That's it.
I was like, "What the hell did that come from?" I fell out laughing. You know?
Oh no! There were stories. I mean, with Robin, I remember we were doing a surprise birthday party for Tom Hanks at the Observatory, and we thought that Tom was coming, and every A-lister you could imagine was there. Jim Carrey, the whole thing, and we're all in the planetarium, and it goes dark for the big surprise,
right?
And all of a sudden, you know, all these comics are trying to throw out one-liners in the dark. And then all of a sudden, Robin Williams takes over. And when Robin Williams took over, nobody dared try to compete with him. Telling you, we had some major hoo-ha guys up there. They just backed off. They gave it to Robin. They said nobody could stay with him. Just let him do it. But there was all guys. I got, you know, Rita Wilson actually co-starred on an episode of Bosom Buddies. And basically, that's how Tom met Rita.
She told me it was like, and then Jove wasn't like, I was on that. She got Jove to the volcano, and then it was like, I met you. I was in Bosom Bunnies, you were. Or was it Tom saying, who was that
Tom,
girl from?
Tom called me and said, it was not Jove versus the Volcano. It was a movie he did.
Anyway, we have a little bit under a minute left for our segment.
Anyway,
I want to go on forever.
Yeah, but I've been very lucky to deal with high level talent, and I do well with them because, like Phil Jackson, I can coach very, very talented people. I'm not trying to teach acting. You don't teach Tom Hanks how to act. You don't teach Robin Williams how to act. I told Robin Williams, if you don't stand on your mark, you may not wind up with some of your best material in the show, but I didn't tell Robin Williams how to act. And that's what my success was. I work with highly evolved talent much better than asking me to work with talent who has not yet arrived.
Well, and you still continue to do that. And I can't thank you enough. I mean, I wish we had 2 hours, 3 hours to keep talking like this. But, you know, I'm so grateful to have you in our lives, my family's life. You guys have been so supportive, you and your family, and certainly supportive artistically. And I just can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Joel.
Well, it's been a thrill. It was fun. I got a chance to talk. I love to talk.
I know. All right, guys. Many thanks to Joel Zwick. Stay tuned next week. We got some special, special things happening next week. Don't forget, Miranda Sings, voiceamerica.tv this Saturday. And this is James Barber on the Star Power Hour. Log on, tune in, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks again for tuning in this week. James Barber will be back next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4talent.com, the arts and entertainment social network on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Now go check out our site, and we'll see you next time.